Welcome to Student Loan Justice. Welcome to Student Loan Justice Radio. I'm your host, Alan Collins. It's a surprisingly mild day here, summer day in Washington, D.C. And before we get the show started, let me just tell you a little bit about our organization. Student Loan Justice was formed in March 2005 for the purpose of returning all standard consumer protections to student loans. This problem has grown from a $350 billion problem in 2005 to a $1.4 billion problem here today. Our group has been to Washington, D.C. three times now. We're originally based in near Seattle, Washington. Our first trip to Washington, D.C. was great. We were knocking on doors with Congress, and this was followed by some very good favorable press releases, press activity by Fortune magazine reporter Bethany McLean, and that very quickly snowballed into a top story feature on 60 Minutes. Well, subsequent to that, our next trip to Washington, D.C. Led to Hillary Clinton introducing the Student Borrower Bill of Rights in 2006, and this would have returned bankruptcy protections to student loans, paved the way for it. It would have allowed refinancing of student loans, which is very important. But folks, it really comes down to bankruptcy. And since about 2007 or so, this has been our sole focus. And unfortunately, Congress, while there have been a couple of good pieces of legislation that have been introduced, Congress needs to be pushed. And so Student Loan Justice has plodded on as a citizen organization, a true grassroots organization. We've been funded completely, either self-funded or more recently funded completely by you, the members. And so if I could ask everyone to please consider this important work that we're doing, because nobody else is doing it on the Hill inside the Beltway, believe me, please consider supporting our efforts by going to our website, studentloanjustice.org, and making whatever sort of contribution that you can afford. This problem won't get solved without the citizens putting pressure on Congress, and that is why we are here. Okay. So having said that, let me tell you about today's show. We're meeting today with Mr. Ed McKinley in Boston, Massachusetts. Ed has been working on this problem with us for many years now, with some notable successes. He's been pounding the pavement and beating up his shoes with people like Elizabeth Warren, the Kennedy administration prior to that. And in the House, he's done a lot of work with former Representative Tierney, and hopefully we'll talk about that a little more. And most recently, with a new congressman, and we'll be very interested to get into that. Let me click him in here. Give me 1 second. Pardon the silence here, folks, while I dial Ed in. This is, as I may have mentioned, our third podcast, so we're still sort of working out the kinks here, but bear with us. And Ed, are you there with us?
Alan, I'm right here. How are you doing this afternoon?
Oh, fantastic. Good to hear your voice. How's everything going in Boston?
Well, in many ways, quite well. You know, we're enjoying the summer here after a very difficult winter. So in that sense,
yes,
things are quite nice. I wish that I had more good news for you, however, regarding our efforts to convince our legislators here in Massachusetts to do what I consider the right thing and tackle this student loan fiasco at its roots.
Yeah, that's right. I want to talk about that just a little bit and to give the audience a little bit of background. After our research was used as a basis for a seminal 60 Minutes show The Attorney General, then Attorney General Eliot Spitzer, conducted a investigation with the state of New York. And in addition, the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee in the Senate, which was then headed by Senator Ted Kennedy, they both launched investigations. And they found widespread corruption across the board around the student loan system. This involved the universities, where the financial aid administrators from, I think, five universities were forced to resign. This included corruption within the Department of Education. It was a big deal. And as a result of that, Senator Ted Kennedy introduced and passed the Student Loan Sunshine Act. And that would have, it wasn't a good bill, but it was an okay bill, I guess. And most notably, it was Senator Kennedy's last piece of higher education legislation. The legislation would have prevented, the legislation in fact did prevent schools from doing deals with lending companies, prevent banks from using school mascots and so forth for selling their private loans. So it was, you know, a fairly solid piece of legislation that was subsequently undermined, I should probably add, by the Federal Reserve Bank. But anyways, I just want to give the audience a sense for the history of this problem and how legislators in Massachusetts are so important to this problem. And after one sort of funky term where a Republican took over Senator Kennedy's seat after his passing, a new senator, Elizabeth Warren, took his place. Now, Ed, can you give the folks a sort of an idea for the work you've done with Elizabeth Warren and what sort of how she's performed on this topic?
Well, I just first want to mention that, ironically, the first I ever heard of you and Elizabeth Warren happened simultaneously in 2006 on a Sunday evening when I was just beginning to become aware of how much ensnared I was in this student loan fiasco myself. Had convinced Leslie Stahl to do a very strong piece on this issue on 60 Minutes, in which Professor Warren was a very important and key guest and part of that segment. So
I remember it well.
As you well understand, it snapped my head around. I didn't realize how big the problem was until I saw you guys on TV. And that was when I decided that I was going to fight. And moving ahead, fast forwarding a number of years, when I first heard that Elizabeth Warren was going to run for the seat against Republican Scott Brown, I thought, I was extremely excited and, in fact, became very, very active in her campaign, including being elected by the Democratic Committee where I live to delegate for her at the Democratic Convention in Massachusetts for her nomination.
So this was sort of a perfect coincidence for us. I mean, is it not? And in case the audience isn't aware of this, Elizabeth Warren taught bankruptcy law at Harvard for many years. And as Ed mentioned, she was one of the key guests on the 60 Minutes piece that I mentioned earlier. So you must have been excited, as was I.
She is clearly considered by many, and including apparently President Obama, to be amongst the leading experts in consumer and bankruptcy law, as evidenced by President Obama asking her to help formulate the Consumer Federal Protection Bureau, which, of course, he also wanted her to head up, but there was just a little too much political resistance at that time. So, yeah, I thought we finally had the strong voice that we were going to need to be able to begin to move this agenda. However, I've become very puzzled by the Warren camp on this issue. When she first took office, I had considerably strong dialogue with her education counsel, Julie Morgan, who assured me that there were people working on restoring bankruptcy protection, but that was about the only thing that she would tell me. And unfortunately, since that time, we really don't have the kind of communication we used to have, and I'm not exactly sure why, but I think it's because I expressed great concern at the legislation that Senator Warren did introduce relative to student
loans.
Now,
just for the audience, let me interject here. Elizabeth Warren has been in the Senate for, 4 years now? Is that correct? Somewhere in there. To date, she's introduced, a couple of pieces of higher education legislation. The most notable is a refinancing bill, which would essentially take federal and private student loans and repackage them as new loans with ostensibly lower interest rates. But there has been nothing from the Warren camp publicly about bankruptcy. In fact, I've noticed, Ed, that Elizabeth Warren hasn't even mentioned bankruptcy and federal student loans in the same sentence since she was even running for the Senate. So I share your concern. I will say one quick thing. I heard from her staffers. I talk to them fairly frequently, and they assure me privately that the senator is for the return of standard bankruptcy protections for student loans. But we've seen nothing from her publicly. And you say you're puzzled, Ed. I'm a little beyond puzzled at this point. But
yeah.
Please go ahead if you can.
I guess I was trying to be polite, because I don't think we have a five-second delay here. you know, the bill that she did, in fact, introduce, I begged her staff to reconsider introducing that bill. And unfortunately, simultaneously, Congressman John Tierney, whom I met with personally on a number of occasions, had a very strong relationship with his staff, also introduced a companion bill into the House, which I begged them not to do. And just so people can understand, it's not because I'm against refinancing rights. In fact, the absolute opposite is true. I think that anybody who can get a better deal on a student loan should be able to do so. And it's a very strange thing that is excluded from student loans. But when you look at the bill itself, I would estimate that probably less than one-third of all individuals who have student loans may qualify for a very small reduction in interest rates. Some people might
so the audience can understand, the idea was to refinance student loans at the current rates, which are somewhere around 5.5% for undergraduate loans. So we're talking about a 2%, 2 or maybe 2.5%, 3% reduction for federal loan borrowers, typically.
Some people might say, and I understand their logic at times, at least it's something, or it's a step forward. In my opinion, it was an enormous step backwards. And the reason that I say that is tremendous energy and political capital was spent by the Warren people and others to promote this bill. And what I feel is that it really sucks a lot of air out of the room with regard to folks like you and I and many, many others who are entrapped in this problem, being able to bring the real issue to light.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, Ed. And I have to say, over the past 10 years, the air has been constantly sucked out of the room, first by a political debate about lowering the interest rates, which was really kind of a joke anyways. It only applied to undergraduate subsidized loans. That debate sucked 2 years of time out of the political space. after that, it was another 2, if not 3 years, fighting over this gainful employment rule, which only applied, by and large, to very, very sort of bad-acting private universities, and other. And then Warren's refinancing debate, again, sucked another couple years out of the body politic and really killed the conversation. I couldn't agree with you more, Ed. And I would add just quickly that the Warren refinancing bill really isn't refinancing as much as it is federalization of these loans. Because sort of the, one of the major points of the bill was to give private loan borrowers who often have interest rates in the double digits, significant relief. But, you know, in refinancing a private loan, and by the way, this means paying off the banks full book value for loans that they probably wouldn't see 50 cents on the dollar for otherwise. So it is a bailout for the banks. But, you know, private loans at least have statutes of limitations so that after 5 or 7 years or whatever it is in individual states, the lenders can no longer pursue the borrowers legally. And, you know, they would lose that protection in having these loans essentially federalized. And so Ed's right. It's a horrible bill. It's a horrible bill that would do little or nothing for the vast majority of borrowers. And Elizabeth Warren, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Ed, but it was my impression that Elizabeth Warren was the, sort of the new gunslinger in town. She was the new sheriff, and she was going to come and crack the whip and mean it. But we have not seen anything like that yet. What we've seen is this bailout bill that you mentioned, and really nothing more but very pleasant-sounding rhetoric. At least that's my opinion. What's your take, Ed?
Well, you know, if people are not as well educated on this issue or not paying as close attention as people like you and I do, and you watch snippets of clips of Elizabeth Warren addressing certain Senate hearings that have involved people from the Department of Education, and in some occasions, I believe, people who are also involved in the private side, the services, the giants like Sallie Mae, et cetera, she comes across as an absolutely staunch advocate for the lenders. However, shaking your fist in the air and pointing your finger at people has done nothing whatsoever to change policy or to drive effective legislation. In my opinion, the people who are benefiting most from this situation are truly just not afraid of Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, I have to agree. And in my estimation, I agree with you absolutely. You know, the banks put out this fiery rhetoric, saying, Elizabeth Warren's nasty and mean and we don't like her. But I have to say, at least based on the legislation that I have seen, she is a friend to the banks, despite whatever you might hear.
Well, it worried me considerably when she launched this bill and has made absolutely wild claims that many, many millions of dollars will be saved by borrowers and put back into the economy. However, once again, I have to go back to, I've read the bill. And it's not a difficult bill to understand if you're following this situation. I would go as far as to suggest that I would find it unlikely that even most of the people with private loans with high interest rates would qualify for any kind of relief under the bill. It does have qualification components, which some loans did not originally have. In other words, you need to have an income-to-debt ratio that's satisfactory, a credit score that's satisfactory. And for most people, the simple fact
and, that... And your loans must loan, be not... And your loans also must be not in default as
they must
a
be in
prerequisite.
Default. And as I learned early on, when I tried to finance a very modest home when I first came out of college, and my loans were in good stead, I was unable to get a mortgage for $60,000. So, you know, based on creditworthiness, I don't know where people who have student loans that average over $30,000, many that are much higher than that, how they're going to meet creditworthiness that is left to the discretion of the Secretary of Education. There are no firm guidelines written. In our experiences, as you know, when the Department of Education has been left to their own device, I've never seen a positive outcome on our behalf.
You know, and that's another misconception of the public that I want to just highlight quickly. People out there need to realize that the Department of Education was set up and is currently run largely by former executives from the student loan industry, Sally Mae, Nelnet, and others.
And
the Department of Education, yes, that's right. It's a revolving door. It goes both ways, and they're all on the same team. In fact, the Department of Education has...
You can't tell the players without a program.
That's right. I might be interested in knowing that the Department of Education stopped calling the schools and the lenders what they are, which is objects of oversight, and started calling them financial partners. So the Department of Education has an office called the Office of Financial Partners. Now, if you're a financial partner with somebody, that typically means that everybody is making money and they're all on the same side. And indeed, that definitely is the case with the Department of Education. People don't realize the Department of Education has actually been making, not losing money on defaulted student loans for many, many years. And if, you know, people generally have the misconception that, oh, it's a friendly government agency like, you know, FEMA or the Weather Service, and, you know, they're looking out for the public good. Well, they're not. They're looking out for their institutional interests. And until the public gets wise to that, and this is really another two shows that we could and will do in the mm-hmm. future about this, people need to get wise that it is the people against the banks and the Department of Education, and I would say maybe even the schools, all on the other side. So what's going on over there in Boston and Massachusetts now, Ed? I know John Tierney was defeated. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
John Tierney. Are you referring to John Tierney being defeated?
Yes. Right.
Well, John Tierney, you know, was another individual who, although he was spoke very favorably about our cause when I would speak with him and his staff individually, his actions, fortunately, were often contrary to what he would tell me. But he had been embroiled, unfortunately, or depending how you look at it, in some of his own personal difficulties. In fact, his wife actually spent, I think, 6 months in jail relative to money that they were alleged to have taken from a family gambling business. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, new gentleman, Seth Moulton, who has the pedigree of someone I think that the Democratic Party would be looking at towards much higher office at some point. I became involved with this campaign. However, you know, they've been very, very close-lipped since taking office. They've been very tight-lipped about what actions, if any, they do in fact intend to take regarding this issue. I have weekly contact with his legislative aide, whose name, believe it or not, is Eric Cantor. No relation to the infamous Eric Cantor. And I've been really very concerned about it, just how tight-lipped they are about it.
Okay.
No,
well, I have to say, we're getting a little short on time. There's one more thing I wanted to cover, but just to sum it up, Boston, the home of the Boston Tea Party, where the patriots are, where the people are willing to get their hands dirty and the congressmen are strong, there's some trouble there, folks, from what I can tell, and clearly much more is needed.
Boston and the state of Massachusetts, and I'm sure it's not the only place in the country, but it may be amongst the leaders, have made astonishing capital improvements on all of their state universities and colleges during the time that most people were caught in one of the largest economic downturns in U.S. history. And
That's right. You know, here in Washington, D.C., and everywhere that I've traveled, I see nothing but gleaming, brand-new, Class A architected, you know, glass and marble structures at every university campus.
The college I went to, which is in the same district as Congressman Moulton, has nearly doubled in size, built in an incredible sports and athletic complex. And I would venture to say that the vast majority of that money has been able to come in through student loan money.
Right. And so just
innovation,
just
I
quickly,
think, for,
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Al. I'm sorry.
Well, I just wanted to add on to that. We've been seeing some research recently which indicates that the universities have been able to actually stockpile hundreds of billions of dollars collectively since 2007. This is during a time period when they were crying poor and, you know, the sky is falling type rhetoric and scaring the public and scaring their state legislatures. Well, actually, they were socking away money hand over fist on this in addition to these massive capital improvements that you mentioned.
Well, they seem to, when given an opportunity, bleed, you know, have bleeding hearts about, you know, being poor and lacking state and federal funding, yet the spending on college campuses is beyond my wildest imagination. And there
right.
is evidence to suggest that there may be as much as $1 trillion surplus between all United States universities and colleges.
That's just free and clear cash, essentially, that they've been able to
pigeon
away.
Not including endowments or any of that, right.
Separate from their endowments. Okay, good.
Yeah.
It's good that we make that point. Look, we've got about 4 minutes left. I wanted to briefly touch on some of the rhetoric that we're seeing here in the air these days. They talk. We see articles like a Bloomberg piece that came out this week, basically talking about how the taxpayer could lose billions of dollars if people default on their loans. And I'm just curious about what your take on that whole thing is, Ed.
Well, I think it builds back to accountability and responsibility. And people who do not think that they are being directly impacted by this seem to take the perspective that if people do bankrupt their federal guaranteed loans, that this is money coming out of their pocket. Nothing could be further from the truth, or really, when you get right down to it, credit-based economy is absolutely dependent upon bankruptcy protections. And when you're bankrupting mortgage debts, credit card debt, et cetera, you have to understand that that also is built into the cost. We all pay for that as well. So it's really not a matter of it strictly being a taxpayer's money. It's about our money. And it's about
the fact that
– go ahead.
And I should probably point out here that the Department of Education is making about $41 billion booking – $41 billion in profit every year on the federal student loan system. So when they talk about defaulting on student loans costing the taxpayers billions, that's not actually right. It's actually that the taxpayer won't be making quite as much as they were previously in the absence of bankruptcy protections. And I think that needs to be pointed out.
Well, there's also over 20 million people who are not participating in a very meaningful way in the United States economy because of pill situations.
Absolutely correct. You know, there's probably 20 million people who are hiding from their student loans at this point. But, you know, there's probably 30 million people who are unable to pay. In other words, there's probably 30 million people who are either in default, deferment, forbearance, or are otherwise delinquent on their debt. So this is a huge number of people. And Ed, I'm so sorry that we can't continue this conversation much longer. We've only got about 20 seconds left in the show. So I just want to thank you for coming on and hope to continue this conversation with you in subsequent broadcasts soon. So we're getting very close to the end here, folks. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it and hope you got something out of it. We'll be coming to you about every week or so. Please visit studentloanjustice.org. Join us on Facebook. So that's facebook.com/groups/SLJ group. And please, as I said before, please consider supporting us. Only you will help the situation, and we depend entirely on you. Thank you.